Anything combat with Johnny K.
But it's anything combat, though.
Welcome back, combatants, to the Anything Combat Show, wherein we discuss everything mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Johnny K, and today we're joined by a guest who's already been on the show. This is round two with him. He's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Please welcome to the show one of my favorite guests, Miko Hitonen. How are you, Miko?
Thank you, brother, for having me again, and I'm doing excellent. After a cold shower, oatmeal, I'm ready. Bring it on.
We were talking before the show. When did you wake up with the staff? Where'd you get it, and did you have to go to hospital?
Yeah, actually, I had my first staph infection, I don't know, let's say 6 months ago, 5 months ago. And actually, it came on my knee, and I never had it before. I have been training for a long time. But actually, I was in Prague, and I felt like in there, exactly my whole leg started to swell, and then I needed to go to the emergency doctor in the middle of the night in Prague. So that was a show. But all good now, but I have had it also one time now. I was thinking about I'm invincible, so I'm never going to get staph, but obviously not the case, but I got it first time, and hopefully not again, so. That sucks.
Have you gotten anything else?
I have ringworm, I think, two times. But otherwise, because I'm really, really hygienic. But many times, it's not about you. It's not about, you know, some other people who doesn't focus on the details and keeping themselves on clean. But two times, I think, ringworm and one time staph, and that's it. I always shower before and after training. So, and we use antibacterial soap and all the shebang, you know.
So I blame all the other people. I take zero responsibility for my injuries and illnesses. Is that what you do as well?
I don't know. You see, to be honest with you, yes, because I think I'm super clean. So, of course, I'm always thinking about somebody else's fault. But but I don't blame them publicly. And you see, it's unfortunate part of martial arts. You know, it's such so small details. There might be like 99% of people are super clean, and one guy decides like, okay, I'm just gonna hide this staff and I'm just gonna train. That's it. That will affect everyone. So, but overall, hoping for the best. Now I'm all good and not having anything for a long time. So I'll take that.
Last time you came on the show, we were talking about you competing, and you said that you still have a whole bunch of competitions in you. So what are the plans for your competition?
Let's see. Actually, now I was injuring. I had a tooth implant made because last year when I was teaching in Abu Dhabi in Youth MMA World Championship, IMAF World Championship, Team Serbia, so I got it there. The boys got a little bit knee on my face, and later on I need to remove the tooth. So that process has been going on now. So I put the implant on January, and now I'm going to, in 4 weeks, they're going to finally put the implant there. So the actual tooth. So I have not been able to train like super hard, but I definitely want to compete. And now I've been training like hard, let's say 2 weeks again, hard rounds. So let's see, because I'm still a coach. That's my main job. So now I'm preparing for a seminar tour. And basically, I'm training pretty hard. So if I stay healthy, I'm going to fucking Google what is the competition and go there. So I think like if I can get 3 months like solid training without any interruptions, any kind of injuries or staff or whatever, then I'm going to just sign up some competition and let's see how it goes. Because if I now going to sign in some competition, then 100% something is going to happen. So I'm just going to train good. And when I feel like, okay, I have had solid 3 months of training, bam, I'm going to sign in and go compete. Black belt, fuck me. It's going to be hard, guys.
Does that excite you, seeing that the level is going to be so high?
Of course. But I train with black belts every day, so it doesn't bother me. And I was even thinking about to do the fucking adult division. Just they're going to beat my ass, so then they can see. They can say that, fuck it, I beat that joke some more guys. So, I don't know, just my own division, of course, master. I think I just turned yesterday at 44. So I think I'm a master, maybe master 4 already. But that would be a great experience to maybe try the adult division also. When you can maybe fight some legends, and I'm a fan of the legends. So it would be an honor to get beaten my ass by them. So let's see.
I saw you at Kurnow, the gym in the UK. Is that right? It's in the UK?
Yeah, here we are. And actually, I'm at the moment in our home gym here in Cornwall. Today is Sunday, so I'm taking the podcast from here. So I'm training at Kurnow BJJ at the moment. I'm traveling a lot. So I go keep seminars, and also I'm spending a lot of time in Spain, but most of my time is now here in Cornwall. And beautiful day here in Cornwall, sun is shining. We are going to do some barbecue, shoot some shotguns today, and amazing day coming up, and I'm excited. And this is a beautiful place. Jiu-Jitsu is going great. The team is great. Colonel BJJ, nice place to train. Everybody is super, super nice people, high level. So I'm happy to be here.
So when you go back to Spain, you're usually training with Santi Illyrios, is that right?
Yeah, Santeri is my main professor. And actually, I just came from there. I saw Santeri last week, and now I'm going to go back there again on next Saturday for a few days. And then again, in a few weeks, I'm going to go there a few days. And I'm going to do probably a few training with Santeri and do a little bit of tattoos and do stuff that I need to do in Spain. But I'm traveling a lot between these two countries. But yeah, Santeri Lilius is my professor who have gave my all except my blue belt. So really important person in my life and still the greatest fucking fighter who I ever fought. So he can beat me easily, and that's the case. But he's my professor, so.
With him, what have you been recently working on?
With Santeri, I have not had time to train with him so much because he has been doing a lot of seminars. I have been building my career here in UK. So, but usually, I like to do with him. Like, he's really good at many areas, but I still want him most of the times teach me his sweeps or his knee slice passing because it's just basic stuff. But when you do all the details right, and for example, he's focusing heavily on the importance of the underhook while doing the knee slice passing, and of course everybody is, but how he kind of focuses on that, he's passing everybody, so maybe that.
Is that the area that you feel like you need to improve on? Is there anything else that you really want to focus on for your own game?
Actually, I think I'm a pretty good passer. One thing what I should be focusing on more is should be focusing on the modern stuff, so more heel hooks and stuff like that. That's something that I need to focus on more. I'm pretty solid. I'm a top player, but now I'm a little bit older, so I become a little bit lazier. So I play a lot of also from the bottom. But I think the modern game, and actually I have been working on it, my leg lock stuff quite a lot, and especially because I want to understand defensive mechanism because I have hurt myself during the years a few times, actually many times during the heel hooks because I still sometimes struggle to kind of understand when I really am beaten, when it's tight enough, when I need to tap, and it's because there's no pain signal, so it's hard to understand. But that's something that I try to work on, and I need to work on still. So knee bars, toe holds, that's I have been doing very long time. But especially these kind of rolling heel hooks entries and understanding the positioning a little bit better. Sometimes even for me, it's confusing. I'm not sure if I should try to still defense or just tap myself out. So understanding the modern heel hook game, that's something that I still need to work on.
The grappling that I've seen so far with Islam Makhachev holding the belt in the UFC, he's grappled a lot in the clinch and the body locks and up against the cage and shooting takedowns on people. And I feel like people are really scared to sprawl with him because we've only seen a handful of people that are able to do that wrestling sprawling. And I want to ask you about the heel hooks. How do you think someone would be able to even set up a heel hook up against a fighter like that, seeing that it's so hard to close distance and it's so hard to initiate the grappling, seeing that they're so aware of the footwork and the grappling position between the spacing in between each fighter?
I think it's extremely hard. It's extremely hard. Let's say, for example, against Islam, such a good wrestler, and we rarely see. Of course, we see sometimes with MMA, like heel hook stuff. You remember Toquinho was ripping some legs back in the days, but it's not happening. Ryan Hall was doing a lot of heel hook entries and
Paul
tried to do
Harris.
heel. Paul Harris, yeah, Ruslan Paul Harris, Toquinho. I was just yesterday. It came my mind from some random social media post, and I just went again, and unbelievable. He doesn't just let go of the taps, and that's just so, shitty thing to do. But anyway, yeah,
Like
the
it's
heel
on
hooks, it's.
camera. Don't you find that funny? It's on camera that they're tapping, so it doesn't matter. Like
Yeah.
even if you let go and the ref goes, "No, nah, you have to keep going." You go, "No, look at the camera," and they'll give you the win anyway because there's a
Yeah.
commission there.
Yeah, and it's strange. Like, not only one time, I was catched by the moment, and. One time, but I don't know. This guy is fucking strange. And I have heard rumors that even in training, he hurts people all the time. So I don't know. But yeah, I think it's extremely hard, especially with the good wrestlers, because they are so dynamic. And for example, like Islam, you're gonna heel hook him, probably not, but extremely good leg lockers. Let's say Ryan Hall, for example, depending if there's a low-level grappler against him, possibly. But I don't know if it's a. And even in grappling now, we were just talking about with Mark Bauer, who is the black belt here in Colonel BJJ. We were just talking about the, like now in a competition, let's say 4 or 5 years ago, you remember when the heel hooks came really, really popular, like B Team, New Wave, these guys, and Ten Planet, and everybody else. So then everybody was heel hooking, and now it's still going on, but now it's like when we see, for example, ADCC stats and everything, it's not so heavily on heel hooks. There is a lot of RNCs, there is a lot of triangles, a lot of like a AKA basic submissions and heel hooks. The percentage is going slow, like a smaller, because people maybe they are learning how to defend against them more, and especially in MMA, you need to have a certain kind of position to get the heel hook, because you know everybody has a plan until they get hit in the face, like Mike Tyson says. So you need to be secure also from the punches. It's a different ball game, MMA.
One fighter that recently has been doing really well. We just saw Topuria capture the belt, and everyone thought that he was a striker, but he's not actually a striker. He's conventionally a grappler, and every single person that's come on the show that trains with him has said that to me, as well as the fact that if you look at his first eight opponents in MMA, all submissions. He got all of them with submissions. And we saw his fight with Ryan Hall, where Ryan was spamming leg locks and Ilya was staying in those positions and couldn't get leg locked by him and chose to initiate grappling with him and did just amazing. So with Ilya, have you seen his jiu-jitsu game?
I have seen him, and actually, well, a few of my training partners in Spain. I have never trained with him, but I have trained with guys who have trained with him, and everybody says the same: amazing, absolutely amazing. And his striking is also on the point. And have you noticed this fact? Actually, I don't know. Some commentator said it after Ilya's match that I think he has never thrown a kick below the hip, like upper body of the hip. So it's always like every of his kicks is gonna go hip or lower. So low kicks, he doesn't throw high kicks at all. Too risky or whatever. He doesn't throw out high kicks at all. Zero.
What's funny about that is that it's so interesting that everybody teaches the MMA system. There's a complete argument. It's whatever you're most comfortable in. There's one argument that you need to learn everything and then go in the fight and do it and just flow with it. Guess what? Someone like John Jones can do that, GSP. But apart from that, you need to do your strengths and keep it there. If you're not strong in a position, there's no point to spam it. Like, for example, Khabib. Khabib had a push kick and he had a body kick every so often. But apart from that, Khabib's not a kicker. So he's just going to focus on what he's good at and dictate the pacing of the fight. And I feel like Ilya does that really well. I think that if he's going to stay in the boxing scenarios in the fight, then there's not that many people that can outbox him. And because he might be weak in the kicking department, who gives a shit? He's a wrestler. He's a gun jiu-jitsu player and he's a sick boxer. So because of that, everyone just is kind of steering clear from that. And that's another reason why Max Holloway, most recently, if they're going to have that fight, Max always deals badly with low kickers. And seeing that Ilya can't low kick, I think that that's Max's fight to take because Max, I believe, has a better MMA game for that opponent stylistically.
I don't know, man. I think I'm gonna disagree, because I think Max, even great fighter, actually the Gaethje fight. Oh man, how many times I watched the amazing fight. But I still think that Ilya eventually will take Max to the ground and keep him there. I don't know, but I have this feeling that it might happen. And but super excited if the fight happens. Anyone who's gonna win, I will be happy. But I have this feeling that Max is gonna fight somebody. Some this style that he has never fought before, but let's see, interesting stuff.
With the clothing, I asked you previously about how to use the clothing up against someone, either in a street fight or a jiu-jitsu match in the gi. This is interesting now. In the cage, there's a lot of dodgy moves where you can grab people's shorts. We see Connor do it a lot. Like we've seen him have the good positioning where he can stop people's hips from shooting in on him because he's actually holding onto the short fabric. So do you know how to do any of this stuff for MMA, for any of the people listening that are fighters? What advice would you give to them with the holding of the shorts illegally in an MMA fight?
Fuck me, that's a hard one. I think you should do. I think you shouldn't do it. But I don't know. It's hard because, and even in jiu-jitsu matches, there is always people are trying to bend the rules. Like you cannot go inside your opponent's sleeves, and if judge doesn't see, if the referee doesn't see, they put thumb in the ribs and everything. This stuff happens. But even in MMA, can you imagine? You have only shorts and you have only gloves, and still this happens. And they grab the cage all the time, and you know. But I hold my advice is follow the rules and win on that way. That's my advice of grabbing the pants.
Do you think that they should, instead of having the cage, maybe they should just have some glass panels that are like impossible to break?
Revolutionary idea, man. This back to the future. I don't know. I think that would be a little bit strange, but totally possible. Or maybe this kind of a plexiglass, a little bit like in NHL, where you can see through, but it's still like, I don't know. But I think
you can't really
change.
Break that plexiglass in the hockey. You can't really break it.
But I think that would create new problems. Let's say, for example, I'm going to smash my opponent's head with that and or something like that, because now it's still a cage, you know. It still bends a little bit, but if it's the kind of plexiglass, somebody's, for example, pushing the head on there, or I don't know, maybe in the future. We will see. So hopefully Dana will make something happen and we will see one match. But I don't know. Cage is still a cage and it's big part. It's same like we were yesterday talking about. My friend has this kind of a super nice Jeep with the like crazy sound, like boom, 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 crazy sounds. And we were talking about the sounds. And I said, it must be strange because let's say in 20 years, 30 years, there's so many electric cars that you don't have this feeling anymore when you push the pedal to the metal and you feel the car rowing. And it's like, I think it goes too clinical a little bit way. So I don't know. It's a little bit the same if we fight in the fucking class cube. I don't know. Maybe we still need to fight in the cage. So there is this element of the cage, you know, still there.
Miko, how much study do you do on the older style of grappling, specifically like the old Japanese judo stuff?
Quite a lot. And I try to find these kind of old black and white videos, especially old judo Nevasa game. I absolutely love it. And also, I do a lot of study old catch wrestling. I have pleasure to train with Jasse Junkkar, my first professor, who is a catch wrestling specialist, and Chris Thompson, who I trained with in Spain. So great catch wrestlers. So, but judo, catch wrestling, and I even watch like old freestyle wrestling stuff. But judo, old school judo, is my favorite. I just try to find old judo instructions, old judo books and stuff like that, and then I try to kind of bring some elements from that to my BJJ game. So I think there is a lot of great stuff in judo what we can utilize in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu also, and I try to do that all the time, study the art, and I try to mix it a little bit in my own game and create my own variations of the old school stuff. I absolutely love it.
Is judo Japanese or South Korean? I forgot.
South Korea, what is this? Of course judo is from Japan.
I forgot. Let me ask you about the judo kimura. I saw you working on this. Why do you feel like the judo kimura is useful and different to the original kimura or the conventional one?
You mean the power kimura or judo kimura?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. That's the one I'm talking about.
And actually, this is judo kimura, the original name, even though I call it the power kimura. But I saw that move done first time in a black and white judo videos like many, many years ago. And I think the difference is because with that power, aka judo kimura, our pressure is all the way on the hand. And I think the best way to finish it is walk all the way past your opponent's head and sit down so your butt is blocking the head. So I think you just can just create so much momentum there because you are not grabbing, because kimura is double wrist lock, so wrist. So this is, I go super much deeper, and actually sometimes I just use it for stalling the position. Because if I can get the grip in, it's really solid. I cannot finish, but I can make sure that the guy is not moving anywhere because I have his arm pretty tight. So I think it's pretty nice move. Nowadays, I still use it. I still use it, but I might try to do it to do some kind of other attacks, and I kind of fake that I'm going for that, and then I'm gonna switch to that. And also, there is so much nice slicer variations from that same setup. And I was just doing fucking bicep slicer to white belts because it was just fun. Of course, I was laughing after that, and I said, "Sorry, I shouldn't do that." But I wasn't nice and easy. I didn't do it like in a bad way, but it was just there. So I hold it for a while and let it go. So. But yeah, still solid move, and great way to control the arm because the arm is locked. You cannot get away if you lock the power kimura.
Me being a white belt, I'm still learning. I have a crucifix. I can do that. I can do a good Kimura. I have a good triangle.
Good.
My guillotine's okay. But one thing that I've learned, and I won't let anyone take from me, is the ninja choke. This is the single. This is my single favorite move. I don't think there's anything better than this. Ninja choke from the cage, you know what I mean? When they push you up against a wall or they push you into the cage as a defensive submission that you can latch up really quickly. And for someone that's stalling against you, I think this is the counter for every single stalling position that a wrestler would do, an American style wrestler, because the Dagestani type guys, you're not going to catch them with this. But I think that this is the solution to all the stalling up against the cage.
And you mean the ninja choke, like the reverse rear naked choke, a little bit, because we also call in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, we call also ninja choke the choke where I'm on the top side control and I feed my own lapel cross here and I catch it like it goes over your neck, and then I'm just gonna turn and I put my hip, sorry, I put my head against your hip and lift my body. So that's also called ninja choke, where we with lapel in gi game. But yeah. The AKA the reverse RNC. And actually, it has been used in MMA fairly few times. I have seen a few guys, and it's just so beautiful also. It's brutal, and it's absolutely beautiful, beautiful submission. So maybe I will feel that next week again.
With my staph infections and with the herpetiformis, I was like thinking about my health and I was like, fuck me, like this life can be taken from you so quickly, like you have no idea. Like I'm completely healthy, there's nothing wrong with me, but somebody else that wouldn't be healthy wouldn't be able to deal with problems like that. So, have you ever thought to yourself, do you have any fear of death?
Actually, when I turned 43, like 40, I'm now 44. That was the first thing when I started to think about death. Like I started to think, oh shit, I'm 40, so I don't know. So at some point, I'm also going. I'm not fear of death. I don't think about it like that. I'm fearing that, but I'm thinking about it now more than before because I think it's the age. I'm starting to understand that maybe some point also. But yesterday, when I was my 44th birthday, I was generally thinking. I believe that I'm halfway of this journey. I think I'm gonna go 88. That's my guess. But I don't fear it. But I'm just thinking about it more than before. And not in a sad way, but just kind of realizing the fact that in some point even fucking Chuck Shamore is gonna be gone. So fuck me. It's not sad, but it's just what's gonna happen.
When you're in bed and you think about it, let's say, does that kind of get you out of bed? You're like, fuck, let's go to training immediately.
No. No. It doesn't bother me so much. But I'm this guy, for example. I have creative moments, and one of my creative moments is just before I fall asleep. So I'm just about falling asleep, and then I got some idea, and I have always pen and paper, and then I just start to write. It might be technique, it might be some kind of similar grip switch from basic technique or whatever it is, or revolutionary idea for my social media or whatever it is. But before I fell asleep, this is one of my most creative moments. And sometimes also the bad stuff come, but it doesn't bother. I just run through it and went to sleep. But if I get some crazy idea, bum, lights on, I need to write it down and then it's done.
So you're telling me we both have ADHD?
Probably, yeah. But I'm AD's kid, so I have never diagnosed it. If I would take the test now, 100% everything already. Blah, 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 blah. So. Yeah, watch me 5 minutes and you can make the diagnosis.
I had some BJJ guys on the show, and we're talking about a move that, because you know how I told you I'm tall, I'm long. I think my reach might be like 6'4", 6'5", right?
Cool.
With my reach, I can reach around to positions where other people can't, and I'm trying to get more technical so I don't use the fact that I have attributes. I want to know and have fight IQ and use all the positions, and then that type of person's unbeatable. When I was thinking about the back take and the kind of back mount where you're both sitting and you have their back and you kind of got the seat belt around them, I was thinking about the executioner where you grab the guillotine and you just pop their like neck out, their vertebrae, whatever it is. What are your opinions on the executioner?
Oh, that's a nasty one. Actually, I filmed it just a few weeks ago, and I even felt bad filming it because it's so it's brutal. But again, not super realistic. You can sometimes, again, depending on the situation, if you catch it on the moment, possible. But I think I have done it in real sparring maybe 2 times in the last 11 years. So it doesn't happen so often. But still, it's a technique that can happen, and if you can lock it, oof. You can probably remove the head if you want. So super powerful, super nasty. And even in training and whatever you do, be extremely careful. So if you guys train it, even when we are filming and we know what we are doing, I needed to still be extremely careful because it's, you can do a lot of bad damage. So all the beginners there, don't even try it. And be extremely careful. Or if you try it, you try it with a, some high-level grappler or some black belt who is going to teach you what to do, because if something goes wrong on that, oof, that's not good. So be extremely careful because it's a head and spine, and even if you can even do body triangle at the same time and you are ripping the head, you can snap somebody's neck. So extreme carefulness when you train that. So
Is that easier for someone that's long like me?
I think so, because we have long limbs. Like, it's easier to catch, because if we had a short arms, it's harder to catch. And again, luckily I have not so big muscles, so it's easy to sneak in if we are bulky guys that are also bigger. And same like for you, for example, you told me that you like triangles and stuff like that. I do a lot of triangles. I have long legs. And for you, when you do triangles, what is the most important detail? What makes your triangle many times work? What do you think when you lock your triangle? What is the first thing what you need to focus?
When I've grappled with some amateur fighters and flow grappling with some like brown belts and stuff, I can't catch the brown belts. The best that I've caught someone with would be like blue belt because I've just started. But I have to say that when I do the triangle, it's the fact that because my legs are so tall, I grab when if I grab their wrists or I grab their hands or something from that position. The speed in which I'm able to shoot the leg up and then around, that is the single easiest thing. Because if I shoot the leg up and I close it and it's shit and it's like half in, half that, from there I feel very comfortable working patiently, not rushing any position. But if I can shoot one leg over and close it, from there I feel like moving the leg around, working their head, working their arm across. I feel like the reason that's such a high statistic win for me is that I feel comfortable in the position because I understand little intricacies.
Cool. And I can give you one this kind of a small tip, what is easy to remember. So of course there is a ways. For example, if I shoot my triangle and I'm facing my opponent like this, of course I can even sometimes finish it like this. But memory rule, arm bars and triangles, remember that you are in the perfect angle when you can see inside your opponent's ear. So if you're fighting the triangle and you always can create an angle where you can see inside your opponent's ear, then you're usually in the nice position to finish. So it's good, especially for the beginners. So think about always, if you are in the armbar position or in triangle position, try to position your body on the way that you can see inside your opponent's ear, and then you are usually on the proper positioning.
How do you get the arm bar if you've got the guy in the triangle? How do you steal his arm if he's not tapping or he's got enough oxygen or gaps to breathe in? How do you steal his arm?
Usually it's fairly easy to break the grip because we already have the triangle, and I'm not a huge fan of opening my triangle and switching to traditional armbar. So of course sometimes I do it, but because I believe when the triangle is locked, usually I try to finish it. So I have the triangle locked and I try to finish the armbar from there. I'm not a huge fan of letting my triangle go and switching to traditional armbar. Usually I just try to grip the like to rip the brake off, and many times I can do it because the triangle is so strong, and I just go double wrist and I just rip it off. But sometimes I also, because triangle and armbar, they play nicely together, especially in all kind of a traditional jiu-jitsu movements. You go to the triangle, it doesn't work, you switch to the armbar. But I think we should train more to really finish the triangle, so we don't need to go to the armbar, because still I prefer chokes, because there is always going to be tough guys who doesn't just tap on the armbars and leaps, and especially if we are in the self-defense situation, sometimes you're going to break their arm, no effect. But if somebody's on triangle, they don't tap, they usually go to sleep. So, but yeah, usually I keep it pretty simple. If I cannot finish the triangle 2-on-1, and I just rip the arm, I grip the brake, break the grip, and then try to finish the arm bar. Or even what I have been doing many times is you can also do kimura from traditional, like a triangle setup. So you have the triangle, but you cannot get the arm bar, but you can also sometimes try to switch the kimura in. But they play nicely together. Kimura and arm bar, sorry, triangle and arm bar, like a sister and brother. You need to learn them both and mix them both.
Question about yourself now. How many times do you feel like you've reinvented yourself so far in this life?
Oh man, that's deep. I have no idea. I think only like maybe like two times. And the latest one was when I stopped my previous life, all the stupid stuff, and then I was just floating. And then when I found martial arts, I think that was the biggest one for me. And because I still remember, I was thinking about like what I'm gonna do. What I need to make some kind of decisions. And I started my first decision was I stop lying. I'm gonna stop lying, and I'm just trying to be as honest I can. And that was the most revolutionary, decision for me. Because after that, okay, I started to do martial arts, and I started to keep this mindset of helping people and doing good stuff and don't talk shit and just try to be a good man, and everything started to lock into pieces. Of course, I have earned my place where I am now through hard training, but also I think that life will give you good things if you're a good person. And I don't do good things just that I want something good, but I just really want to help people and be a good man. And if you do that, then you're humble and work hard and be a just good man, I think life will reward you. And that's why I'm sitting here. I made the decision, I have stick to the decision, and I have been, doing really good stuff for a long time and helping people, and I love to help people. And obviously, destiny gave me I'm really fortunate that I'm sitting here. I'm living the dream. I'm teaching jiu-jitsu, and my life is nice. I can do something that I love. I can train jiu-jitsu, I can train jiu-jitsu, and I can pay it well. So I'm living the dream. But I think it's those decisions what I made years ago that brought me in this moment.
A lot of the fighters that come on the show, they mention destiny, they mention their vision of themselves, karma, different stuff like that. And it's interesting because then I'll ask them if they're religious or not, and they're like, no, I'm not. So are you a spiritual person?
I am a spiritual person. I was just yesterday talking about, I believe in some kind of I don't know, some kind of outer force, but I don't know what it is. I cannot put word on it, but I feel like this kind of energy and some kind of that we are some, everybody is connected in some way. I don't know how, but it also kind of calms me down, because if you are like a, I think also religions are famous, like a really popular, because they give you this kind of okay, when you're gonna die, there is gonna be a better place. Like it gives me comfort when I know that we are in some kind of a connection. I don't know what it is, but I'm a spiritual person. I truly believe, I don't know if a karma is the right word, but I truly believe that in end game, if you do good things, you're a good human being, do good stuff from your heart, life will reward you. It will come on front of you also the, and also the other ways. If you're a fucking shitty person, and if you do bad things to the people, you might do well 50 years, but in some point it will come through you. And still, I think everybody who are not a good person and try or at least try to be a good person, they are thinking about it. I wouldn't go sleep anymore so good if I wouldn't be the man who I am today. So I need to be true to myself, otherwise I wouldn't be sitting here. And that's it.
What happens after we're gone?
Good question. Hopefully we're gonna reborn. I don't know. Hopefully we're gonna create a new life. And I don't know, maybe we are just a playground for UFOs. I truly don't know. But I hopefully it's not there, but we will see. Hopefully there's jiu-jitsu also, whatever we're gonna end up to.
This is a yeah, hopefully there's jiu-jitsu wherever we end up. Whenever I talk to the fighters, I ask them about comfort zone and discomfort zone. And as we know, all the discomfort leads to growing. Like, for example, if I have a decent right hand, then where's the left hook? You know what I mean? Oh, you've proven that your right hand's sicker than you get in the fight. You need to throw a left hook. It looks like shit. You get countered. You get put out cold. And then the fighter goes, oh, I guess I was in the comfort zone for too long. And then catching that, looking at other people's mistakes, putting it back onto yourself, and then kind of separating their experience, taking their experience that actually hasn't happened to you, and then you can improve from that. I want to ask you, how often do you think you stay in the discomfort zone so you can grow? Do you find yourself falling back into comfort zone?
Let's say I go in my discomfort zone every single day. Every single day, because I know what that does to me, and I start my day by doing that. So I start my day every day to doing cold water before. So I start my day, let's say normal day, I wake up 7:30, and first thing what I'm going to do, I wake up, I'm going to go to the sofa, and I'm going to do 3 rounds of Wim Hof breathing, because I just want to get myself going on. And after that, I'm going to do 3 to 6 minutes of ice bath or ice cold shower outside here in UK, so the water is really cold. Or I have also ice bath. And after that, I'm going to eat my breakfast. So I'm going to start my every day by going on my comfort zone. And it makes me feel great. If I miss it from some reason, I'm sick or whatever, I feel like shit. So I start my day by doing that. But in jiu-jitsu, it's also the same. But sometimes now, I'm in the comfort zone. You know, if I, for example, do a white belt, blue belt classes, and I roll with them, I'm in my comfort zone all the time. So. But in jiu-jitsu, I think it's also important to put yourself in the positions where you don't feel comfortable, and so you're not sticking to your ABC game. And that's what I always tell to my students also. We are here to learn, so don't play your ABC game. Grab the kimura grip, do a front roll, and see what happens, and try to learn on those mistakes. If it works, good for you. If it doesn't work, try to, you know, learn from that. But discomfort zones, huge part of my life. I love cold water, and I love to do stuff what I don't want to do, because after that, you're going to feel great. And my days start always with the cold water. And it sucks, but it's only a few minutes. And when I'm done that, I feel that I've climbed over the mountain already, and I'm on my way to the day. So I love it.
See, I kind of piss myself off because I want to stay in the comfort zone to prove, look how good I am here. Look how good I am there. What should I do to stop my ego from taking place, seeing that I want people to see that I am good, and to be in the discomfort shows that I look like shit, and then people are like, oh, you know, this guy's shit, but really I'm learning faster than them, you know.
I know that was a great way to describe yourself. So it is exactly why we want to be a comfort zone. Okay, if I'm a great passer, I want to be in a passing position, so I don't look stupid. But it's also kind of you need to accept the journey, and the journey is gonna be ups and downs and everything. Just accept the journey and just try to go round by round, and just training by training, and just do everything. And again, it's like let's say, for example, competing. When you compete first, let's say 1 to 3 times, you are shitting yourself and you are like stressing because, oh, it's new. I have not been in the situation before. But when you say, let's say your competition number 87, you are not stressing so much because it's familiar situation. It's same like in jiu-jitsu and uncomfort zone. Try this new stuff and then you don't feel so awkward, even though if you're in a bad position, just try to put yourself out there. And sometimes, you know, make yourself to end up in a bad, even if you fight somebody that you know is... You can beat this guy. Let them take your back. Let them take your back and work your way out of there. And if they catch you from the back, no one cares. And don't be an asshole and tell them, oh, I let you to have my back. No. Just, you know, try to create this kind of a small challenges for yourself in the training, you know. And I like to always pass from this side. Today, I'm just, whatever happens, I'm just going to try to pass on the other side. And everybody is, you know, taking your back and whatever. But you are doing something that eventually is going to elevate your game. And because jiu-jitsu and training always, it's a personal journey. So we train to get, of course, we train to make other people better, but only thing what we should compare is, are we better today than we were yesterday?
How much homework do you do privately on BJJ?
I do quite a lot. I used to do a lot more, but I still do a lot because nowadays I do a lot of work on my students. So I have this my blueprint system, my private students. So I'm building their kind of a game and analyzing what is good for them. But also I do a lot of studies by myself. I used to do like 4 hours a day, but now I have so much stuff. But I still do, let's say, maybe 30 minutes, 1 hour, like stuff that I want to, you know, learn submissions. And I learn still every day. I'm just a white belt who never gave up. I truly am. And I feel blessed that I have this ability to, that I really don't think that I know fucking everything. Absolutely no. Quite the opposite. Every day, if you keep your mind open, you will learn more. And usually now I'm studying specific positions, transitions, and entries. Like if I, for example, I'm starting to do, let's say, spider guard, and I'm learning spider guard entries and spider guard stuff. But still, the study, I think you need to evolve always. When jiu-jitsu evolves and your own game, this journey will never end. There is always going to be something to learn. And even if you're a black belt, or I think even if you're a coral belt, this journey never ends. There is always something to learn, and it keeps this interesting. Because I think also jiu-jitsu will lost its magic if there's, okay, now I learned all of the moves. Done. What's next? No. That will never happen in jiu-jitsu. But I think it's important to also study, and also the modern game, how guys are, because jiu-jitsu is evolving, all the leg lock games and transitions and everything. So keeping up with the young guns, so that's also important. But I do old school study, judo stuff, and also the new school and positional if I'm playing some specific stuff, for example. So, but I do the study still every day, but not as much as before.
With BJJ, you kind of elaborated on the fact that you make yourself a better person by helping others. You stay humble. You're constantly fraud checking yourself. You're making yourself accountable to what you're bad at. So you improve your inconsistencies and you're growing as a person because of that. Why do you think BJJ makes you a better person outside of the training?
Because basically the training is like life. You will fail all the time, and the failures are much easier to accept when you learn how to fail. Basically, in jiu-jitsu, we learn how to fail all the time, and we also learn if you fail 1,000 times, then you're going to eventually start to learn it and start to do it. So I think the kind of accepting the failures is really important in jiu-jitsu, and it just makes us better versions of ourselves. Because in jiu-jitsu, you need to stay humble. Whatever you do, you need to accept the fact that, okay, this guy is beating me, or I cannot do this. Or jiu-jitsu is so hard. So the fact is that it's so hard. And if you can stick to that, that shows certain kind of personality. There is a lot of people who cannot do it, just, and it's not for them. But I think everybody who does it become a better version of themselves, because it's so hard. And you do something that you are mostly, you're going to fail before you're going to start to learn. And still, I fail all the time. Even though I'm a good, but it doesn't change anything. We're still going to fail most of the times until we're going to catch something. So I think that teaches you valuable lesson in life. Like many times you need to fail multiple times before you can kind of make it. Persistency, resilience, and this kind of determination. I think it's the best tool for self-growth is jiu-jitsu, especially because it's so hard. It's so hard. Nobody is good at jiu-jitsu when they start. Everybody starts from the same. All the world champions, everybody who has ever done jiu-jitsu, everybody start at the same. Zero stripe, white belt, go there and learn the whole process. And everybody is getting beaten before they learn the art. And I think that's a great valuable lesson in life also.
There's a topic point that I don't really know too much about, and it's the Japanese knot from broken scarf hold. Is this even important as a position, do you think?
Yeah. I was playing this with Chris Thompson in Spain, and great position. And I catch that this position also, I do the video with specific entry, but I use the Japanese knot all the time. Especially in Noki, I feel consistently I end up in a position where when I'm able to catch the head, and I love the position. It's nice and nasty, but yeah, that stuff works definitely.
You said that your true passion is to share the art and inspire people to become better versions of themselves. How does that make you feel that that's kind of your position in life right now and that you've helped people?
Makes me extremely humble and kind of even emotional because I get a lot of messages. For example, I have had messages from people around the world who have been thinking about killing themselves, but watching my video on my journey, they decided not to and they started jiu-jitsu and now they're happy that they're trained. So I'm in a goosebumps now because if I can do this for even one person, it's worth it. So I'm extremely humble and at the same time proud that I'm here and I just want to do what I'm doing and it's really important that we can help each other around the world. And again, common martial art, common passion. And if somebody's about to kill themselves and they send me a message, I watch you, I've been following you and I saw your don't quit video and I decided I'm not gonna do it, I'm gonna start jiu-jitsu. I'm almost start to cry, like, beautiful. This is exactly the reason why we do this amazing martial art. So we are helping each other and amazing, amazing. So
The BJJ blueprint that you've been working on your system, you said that it helps visualize the game and conceptualize it. So why do you feel like your blueprint, let's say compared to another, is a little bit superior, when it comes to visualizing the game?
I don't think it's superior. I definitely don't think. I think it's my way and it's my style. So it fits my students and how I'm teaching the art because I created by myself. People has probably even better systems than me, but I have my unique style to teach and my own unique energy and everything. So I think that fits my teaching style perfectly. We have the same main, seven main positions, and with the higher belts, I'm gonna add more positions, and then we're gonna have just top and bottom, and we're gonna feel like every position we have something, and then the game starts to flow. But that's my way, not the superior way.
I've written here, I completely forgot what this topic point is. It says Angry Chill BJJ. What is that? I forgot.
Angry Chill BJJ is the jiu-jitsu club in Gibraltar. I was having a seminar there a few months ago. They started, actually, these guys, they came to my seminar. I think it was last November. I had a lay belt chokes weekend seminar. We have 2 days of lay belt chokes in Malaga. They came to train with me. And after that seminar, these guys get the confidence that they decided they're going to start their own jiu-jitsu club in Gibraltar. And real estate and all of the bureaucracy there. What a show. But anyway, I was there 2 months ago teaching first seminar ever in Angry Chill BJJ. And nice people, nice vibes. And I'm super proud of these guys. And I can hope I can meet them soon again. But yeah, that's the new club in Gibraltar.
Question about pressure. So there's a lot of people that have like anxiety or they get anxious from the either the position that they're in. Like for example, if something recoils, they get the shivering, they get the chest beating really fast, heart beating, and they feel like they can't speak because of the pressure, either because of competition or whatever's happening that's making themselves anxious. Have you ever experienced that, and how do you think you deal with pressure?
I have a like panic attack one time in my life, but this kind of a pressure, of course, I also feel a little bit, but I'm really confident on that. And even when I started to do my videos and be like a public person, I was fucking shitting myself first. I was like, how the fuck I can be first for front of camera? And it was stressing, it was everything. But then I just decided I'm gonna do it and I'm gonna learn it on the way. Nobody's gonna judge me. If they do, I don't care. I'm just gonna try to learn it slowly. So I was just kind of forcing myself to do it until I felt comfortable. And now I feel extremely comfortable basically doing anything. And for example, these podcast interviews, I love them and I will never want to have the answers, sorry, the questions before, because otherwise I'm gonna start to analyze it. I want to be raw and I want to be natural. Like all the questions come at this moment. I don't want to see what you are about to ask me because otherwise I will be probably stressing out more. So now there is no stress because I have no idea what you're gonna ask me. So But yeah.
I was talking with somebody about how playing guard is a little bit detrimental in MMA right now, and one fight that we saw this seriously take an effect that we can take as an excerpt and analyze it and actually have severe ramifications for how the game's going to be played was Armin Tsarukyan versus Charles Oliveira. As you saw this fight, what's so interesting about this fight is we know Charles's grappling is so good, and Armin's grappling, in my opinion, like, I don't know, man. I think that his grappling's good. I don't think his jiu-jitsu's too crazy. Like, he wasn't getting any submissions. He was kind of holding Charles in the positions. And I feel like Charles had so much to give in the grappling aspects of this fight. Every time he would sweep him, every time he changed attack and striked from the jiu-jitsu sequences, but he stayed in guard and he accepted the guard. And that's exactly why he lost. He accepted that position, stayed there, and just lost the fight. Unfortunately, of course, he didn't mean to do that, but that's what actually happened. So, what do you think about playing guard too much in MMA right now?
That's a great example what you just told, because it's problematic, but it's still also the main position. It's still like depending on, let's say, because these guys are extremely good both on the ground. So depending, it's still solid position. If I'm on the close guard bottom and I just to, go over hooks and block the hits, and the other guy's really not good grappler, I'm gonna triangle him absolutely. And the same is gonna happen still in MMA. It depends a little bit who are fighting. But I don't see it so much happening anymore. But I think it's still there. And depending on living on a game plan and who you are fighting against, and let's say you are fighting somebody who's extremely good in wrestling, I see Oliveira's point. I try to either like keep him on close guard, because if I open my guard, he has a strong top pin, so he can maybe come on side control, or maybe it's still if it's in my guard. There is some barrier, and I still have my options. Oliveira, great triangle, straight attacks from the bottom. So maybe he was thinking about, maybe I will catch him. Maybe I'll do Anderson Silva, and last fucking second, I will catch my triangle from. And you remember Anderson Silva fucking chainsaw? You remember that? It was also like last possible moment. Boom, there it was, blood, everything, but it slipped in. And maybe Oliveira was thinking of that like he will have the chance to have the submission from there. Either then, like if he lets the guy pass or do something crazy, he just wanted to maybe believe that he still has the chance to get the triangle. I don't know.
A lot of people talk about wrist locks. If you are in a wrist lock, once you're in the wrist lock, how do you get out of it?
Oh man, it's hard. But usually I do. If I end up in a wrist lock, I just try to put like fist. Don't let your hand to be limp. Always like fist. But it's hard, and be smart also with wrist locks. Like if you feel like wrist lock is there, just tap, because they are pain in the ass to heal. So, and also when you do wrist locks, do it nice and gently, but still do it, because it's actually a great submission. So I love also doing wrist locks. I maybe should do them more, because they are basically everywhere. Always when I have the option, always when my opponent's elbow is blocked, wherever is blocked, there is the wrist lock. So still a solid attack, but I don't remember. Now everybody starts to chase those wrist lock with me, but I don't actually remember when I have tapped last time for a wrist lock. So all the wrist lockers, bring it to me. So let's see.
I was talking to a BJJ player and he was talking to me and he said, that is, he was pointing to the ground, he was like, that is the best position in all of jiu-jitsu. And it was the guy waiting for the roll and he was in the turtle on the ground waiting for the roll.
Yeah.
And I saw your video about the triangle from the turtle. Like
Yeah.
you triangle them and you kind of destroy the turtle. Do you believe that this is the best way to destroy the turtle?
Actually, that technique, the turtle triangle, that looks cool, but to be honest with you, it's extremely hard to hit. It's extremely hard, and you can only do this against lower belt guys. It's good guys, they will never, create so much space. But one thing what you can start to learn, if you want to start to break the kind of a turtle position, for example, start to break it by trying to put the knee in like I did, like break the gap between your opponent's knee and elbow, and try to get the knee in, and other leg, you're gonna start to hook their arm. to create this kind of almost like crucifix position from top. And I think that's gonna open up stuff. And that's how I started to play like my top turtle game. I first started to kind of put my knee in, and I was able to hook one arm, and then I was just, you know, seeing what's coming for me. But the technique, the turtle triangle, only works with absolute beginners. So that's the fact. But cool looking move anyway. It's possible to do, and you need long legs, and sometimes you can hit it, but with high level guys, not gonna happen.
The grappling in the next fight that I'm about to ask you about is going to be ridiculously good. Robert Whittaker is a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He went to the Australian Wrestling Games or something. I don't know what it's called. And he got a gold medal in that, right? So he's got a good wrestling game. That's why people like Yoel Romero, Ronaldo Souza, Derek Brunson, all these MMA wrestlers and grapplers that we all think are good, couldn't really do too much in the grappling department against Rob, because he's such a good defensive wrestler and defensive grappler. And then you have, on the other hand, Khamzat Chimaev, who's undefeated grappler. Not even undefeated in MMA, we already know about that. I'm talking about just his wrestling career. In every wrestling competition he's ever competed in, he's undefeated. I think his record's like 28-0, some shit like that. And he's won every single wrestling comp he's competed in. With this being said, he's got the Chechen chain wrestling type of setup where he's chaining the attacks, and also has a really good jiu-jitsu game. I personally think that Chimaev's jiu-jitsu game is fucking amazing with how he's chaining the wrestling into the submissions, because I don't really see him rushing the positions. I don't see him slap on a submission. I think that he's rushing to get into the position, like we're playing, and I'm going to try and get you here, instead of kind of doing it at a low level. I think he's very high level. So this relationship between such a strong defensive grappler and such a strong offensive grappler, this is really weird, a really hard to pick match, because of course the striking comes involved, because if Rob defends some of the takedowns and keeps on the feet, he can outstrike him well. I want to ask you about the grappling. What do you think is going to happen in the grappling component at the very start of the match, seeing that Chimaev's most likely, with all the other fights that he's had, he's probably going to shoot quickly?
Yeah, I think he's going to do the same. And small tip for Whittaker, be ready. If you give the hand, he will probably skip the hand and shoot like he did with Kevin Holland. So actually, Kevin Holland lost that fight because of that. He was off like, give me a fist bump, and that was it. And boom, comes up, shoot. So I don't know. I think he's going to shoot, and I think he's going to chase the position until he gets it. And he's such a good wrestler. So I think he will want some kind of a body lock, of course, and interesting match to see. But I have a feeling that, you know, Khamzat will take the fight to the ground and be able to get the win. But also, both of them have my respect. So I also love Robert, like, super nice guy, and I hope for the best for him. But let's see, interesting match. Or maybe Khamzat, because everybody's expecting like that. Maybe he's going to mix it a little bit, because also maybe Robert has been like learning a lot this kind of early stage, aggressive, like a wrestler side. So maybe he's going to mix things up to show and also put Robert in the other thoughts. And then she's going to maybe like first round, no shooting at all. Just like a fuck little bit Robert's head. Let's see. Or he just thinks like, I can take anybody, you know, to the ground in this world. So fuck it. I'm going to take this guy to the ground immediately. I don't know. Interesting to see.
Final question for today is about the guillotine choke. I feel like every single time someone gets me in the guillotine, a clip plays in my head of spiking them, right? I know that's terrible, but seriously, the spiking technique, which you just flatline your opponent, you KO them, it's so dangerous, and it puts the person out cold immediately. Do you feel like some sort of spiking technique should be legal? Because I feel like too many people are abusing these kind of positions that if it doesn't work in the street and you do a technique that gets you out of it, I feel like it should be allowed on the softer mat. You're not on concrete. Personally, that's my opinion.
Yeah, and this is like a, because it's same as like all what is illegal and I don't know. Of course, there should be a little bit of limitations, but I still believe that in a high-level MMA, we should be. I don't know. Fucking shoot me if I'm wrong, but I still think like a, for example, some kind of a head kicks when because people are also misusing the rules. Sometimes, you know, I put my knee on the ground, so nobody's gonna, you know, kick me in the face. I think it should be a little bit more free because then there's more like a danger and you cannot play safe. But guillotine, I don't know. A lot of stuff can go wrong, but I think especially in a competitive setup, MMA, more stuff should be legal because these guys are professionals and they can probably handle it. And then there would be like misuse of rules, you know, somehow. But
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for your time, Miko. What do you want to tell the people as we wrap up?
I want to tell people that keep training jiu-jitsu, eat your oatmeals, smile, and be a good person.
Follow Miko on Instagram, link in the description, and follow Anything Combat. We will see you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.